The Napoleonic community has been stunned by some of the decisions made in Sir Ridley Scott's spectacle-filled movie motion blockbuster non-hyphen masterpiece, Napoleon. And it's been a real problem for a lot of us who have struggled to try to understand those decisions. So rather than mounting a further extended denunciation of this movie, I am going to attempt what some say is impossible and try to understand the decisions that have been taken. Now, clearly what's needed here is some assistance from somebody who knows a thing or two about screenwriting. And that's why I'm delighted to have as my guest for this Napoleon movie quarter hourly mini podcast series, somebody who has actually worked for Ridley Scott's production company and written films for him. This is everybody. Guys, please say hello to James Topham. James, hello.
Alex, it's a delight to be on this mini bonus podcast with you.
James, can you say a little bit about your career in film and TV writing?
Yes, so I've worked in film and TV screenwriting for a number of years now, Alex, including working for such luminaries as Channel 4, ITV, and as you said, I wrote a couple of films that didn't get made for Ridley Scott, and I could not be happier to be here talking about one that did.
A lot of listeners will be asking the question, are you going to just do a hatchet job because you're fed up with him because your films didn't get made?
Look, I am fair but firm, Alex.
Fair but firm. Okay, well, I'm going to try to be fair but firm as well. I want to try and come to this with an open mind. And it's probably worth pointing out to listeners that I haven't actually seen this film yet. So for various reasons, tedious reasons related to tedious health issues, haven't been to the cinema, so my way of watching this is going to be in little chunks. Hence the idea for this podcast. We'll do 15 minutes per episode, starting with minutes 0 to, well, 14, I suppose. But we finish with the clock, so it comes to 15. And that means, I think, that we're heading for 10 episodes for this version that's been released on Amazon Prime Video and such like. So, without further ado, James, I'm going to be in your hands. The goal here is for me to learn some stuff about screenwriting from you, perhaps as we walk our way through the decisions that have been taken. We will begin to understand some of those decisions. But James, I just want to say now that the feeling is so strong in the Napoleonic community that such a feeling of disappointment at these decisions that it's going to take a lot for me to come round, I expect.
I understand that, Alex. Look, anything I can do to bridge the gap between these two communities, the Napoleonic quarterly community and the rest of the film going public, I'll do the very best that I can. And I suppose one of the key things for me in often when we're approaching film is, you know, people talk about the truth of Napoleon and whether it's historically accurate. And I think what often, as screenwriters, what we're looking to do is we're trying to find a deeper truth. And maybe some of that deeper truth kind of beyond historical accuracy is something that we can find together today.
What?
So, Alex, I suppose that the question a lot of your listeners will be asking is what happened in the first 15 minutes of a film? What are we trying to do in the first 15 minutes of a film? And I think the first thing you want to do is you want to establish the world that you're in. So kind of like where you are, where your characters live. And then the second thing is to understand your characters. And often when we're looking at characters, we like to talk about a character's wants and a character's needs. Now we've known each other for a lot.
A character's knees?
No, a character's needs, Alex.
Yeah, character's okay.
Needs.
Yeah.
So what they want, what they explicitly want, but actually what deep down they need and what's really driving them.
Okay.
And As well as that, what you often will find in the first 15 pages is what screenwriters call a save the cat moment. So that's a moment when we see our character doing something noble or admirable that makes us like him. So, for example, saving a cat stuck up a tree.
Yeah, that's good.
And then the last thing that we are looking for is to establish motifs. So these are kind of like moments or themes or images that we plant in the first 15 minutes of a film that will come back again and again as the film progresses.
And do you mean this save the cat thing? So that is that a motif? What is this save the cat thing?
So a save the cat moment is a moment early on in the film where the audience is able to look at our main character and say, you know what, I like them, I empathise with them, they're someone who I'm interested in following through the rest of the story.
Because they save a cat?
They might save a cat. Well, that might...
Or a dog.
They might do any other range of things that would enable you to empathise or like them.
Okay, so I'm going to keep a lookout for these motifs.
Good. Keep your eyes out for those motifs, Alex. I think your appreciation of Napoleon the movie will be greatly heightened if you start spotting some motifs.
Well, I'm encouraged already. Okay, let's dive in then. Let's work our way through this first 15 minutes.
So the first scene we come to in Napoleon is a moment of significant historical moment, I suppose.
Significance.
Significance, indeed, yes. Marie Antoinette is going to the guillotine. She's got great hair, very coiffed, but she's getting kind of bits of lettuce thrown at her. The guillotine falls. The guillotiniere, if that is indeed what you'd call him, holds her head aloft in a classic, you know, head cut off scene. And then we cut to Napoleon, who is in the crowd watching, with a face that is quite difficult to read, I would argue, but I suppose his impression sort of is, you know, is like, ooh, that's nasty. So what do you think, Alex, of that this first meeting with Napoleon? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's a big moment, isn't it? A big, big moment. We see our protagonist for the first time. I wrote down that it was a good start. There was genuine acting involved here. He blinked. He looked down and he looked away to the side. Now, that is my kind of acting. I don't know whether it's relevant that maybe listeners should understand that, as it happens, when we were at university together, you often gave me directions. You were the director. I was doing the acting. And it would often be very specific things like this, which I've learned from you about the importance of doing things in this very methodical manner. And that is what we saw here. He blinks, he looks down, he looks away to the side. That could mean a level of discomfort, we could infer, with what's going on. That's what I'm thinking anyway.
I think you might be right, Alex, but only time will tell as the film uncoils. So, next scene, Napoleon's in some kind of revolutionary parliament. Don't really know what that's all about, but obviously some stuff's going on the political scene.
Your lack of knowledge there is potentially problematic or offensive to some listeners who might feel that everyone should know that it's the Assembly/Convention, actually, to be honest. I'm not sure which one it was. But anyway, okay, I suppose you're coming from the perspective of the ordinary cinema goer.
Precisely. There's a bloke called Robespierre, kind of like doing something or other.
Okay.
And most importantly, to your average film-going member of the public, we see the first appearance of Mark Bonner, best known, of course, for his performance as the dissolute Duncan in the BBC detective series Shetland. And Mark Bonner will be a very important part, I think, of this film going forward. And how do you know he's called Juno?
Well, because it was in the subtitles. That's how.
Yeah,
that's how.
Yeah, very good, very good, Alex. And that's a key screenwriting technique there. In play, you put the character's name on the screen so that everyone knows who they are.
It's very helpful. Very helpful.
Through a similar process, I also note that he's talking to a guy called Barra. And Barra is giving Napoleon a job to do. So he's saying, look, we need to take Toulon back from the French And if he does that, he'll get the kind of promotion that Napoleon so wants.
James, I noticed a bit more acting from Joaquin Phoenix in that scene.
Look, I think your analysis of acting is going to be as vital to your listeners as our analysis of the film. So please, Alex, go ahead.
In response to Barras's impassioned, or rather impassioned determination, I thought Bonaparte simpered. He did a funny little simper, didn't he?
He did do a simper.
What was going on with the funny little simper?
Was he known historically to be a simperer, Napoleon? Do you feel like that's historically accurate?
It's not a word I'd come across. He's generally thought to be pretty awkward in general, and indistinguished at this stage. But the simper is odd, isn't it? It just struck me as being very uneasy, but in an uneasy kind of unease. You see what I mean?
Well, that's a very good description, Alex. Yeah. Look, I think. And I don't know if you agree with me here. At this point, I think it's quite difficult to read Napoleon, difficult to understand precisely, you know, what he's thinking, what he wants. So fortunately, when we move to Toulon, what we find is that Sir Ridley, as I call him, has introduced a voiceover that's going to help us understand precisely what's going on. So Bonaparte goes to Toulon. He's worried that the French are screwed. The English have the high ground and the forts, and they also have what he refers to as big guns.
Oh yeah, these are the big guns that point out at their own ships. That's the quote, isn't it? Yeah,
that's a direct quote from the film. Yeah, no, and for me, that's a really, you know, really clear way of explaining the dramatic stakes at play in this scene.
He also, in that letter to Lucien that's in the voiceover, talks about the Corsican ruffians are unfit for office, which is the worry that's the stereotype that he's going to fall into. And he mentions I wanted to ask about this line where he talks about mother's ambitions. He fears mother's ambitions will be quashed. Is that it then, in terms of character motivational exposition? Because it seems a bit, I don't know.
Well, it might be a bit on the nose, I suppose you could say. But other people would say, look, we're being really clear about what, you know, who Napoleon is and what he wants. I think that's really good. I think, like, do we know anything about his mother from kind of a historical point of view that might be able to elucidate it?
Well, James, it's funny you should ask that, actually, because there's been a lot of talk about historical accuracy, and I'm anticipating a lot of questions from you. Somebody who doesn't know much about the period asking about this, that, and the other. I wanted to show you my level of commitment to the notion that this is for a mass audience of people who don't necessarily know much about the period. And so I'm going to shun the various historical sources that and professors that I've got privileged access to, and instead refer in these episodes to just one book about Napoleon. It's the Ladybird Adventure from History book for children. It's called The Story of Napoleon. It's by somebody called Eldugard Peach, and it does have something on Napoleon's mother. I'm going to quote what Eldugard Peach says now. He writes, "Madame Bonaparte was a woman of strong character and determination." So strong character and determination, which I think fits, doesn't it, with Napoleon's clear fixation, we might say, with his mother? Or maybe it's, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, this is a general with mummy issues, Alex, I think it would be fair to say. And it's really good to see that your historical sources sort of back up that component of the film.
There it is. There it is, yeah.
Of course, in Toulon, we have the best line, I would argue, in the first 50 minutes of the film so far, spoken probably by an unnamed character in the script, where one of the English guards shouts at the French to move their fucking goats.
James, is this one of the motifs you talked about? Potentially goats potentially.
It's entirely possible. I mean, only time will tell as we go through the 150 minutes that constitute Napoleon the movie, but I suspect that it may not be the last goat that we see, Alex.
Yeah, well, we're going to have a side bet, but okay, we're going all in on goats being a potential motif. That's good. Let's keep an eye out, a goat watch then for the rest of this film.
And some of your listeners might say that Napoleon himself was something of a goat when it came to military tactics.
Well, he certainly came across mountain goats whilst crossing the Alps. So,
no, Alex, I was using goat as in the well known abbreviation, greatest of all time.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah, okay.
The next scene is Napoleon and his French army approaching the British ramparts in the middle of the night. The British soldiers are sort of carousing. They're being debauched to such an extent that they can't see the approximately 10,000 Frenchmen walking with ladders, heavily armed, some of them on horses. Towards the fort, but that's good. They sneak up quite successfully, and then they take on the fort in what is our first action scene, Alex. And I don't know your thoughts on the action that we get at this point.
I thought the sneaking around was pretty funny to start off with. Again, I'm Napoleon himself was increasingly agitated, wasn't he?
Mm.
He was nervous. I thought it was a bit odd that Barat was right next to him. That was a bit unusual.
They had the entire French hierarchy right there, but you know, I guess they wanted to see. But of course, the big shocking moment that comes in this segment of the film is when a British cannon fires into the French army and hits Napoleon's horse just as he's charging into battle.
Well, it's a shocking moment, which definitely I can't talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. I've told James about it. It's too terrible. My I'm very, very, very unfortunately, my son, who is really too young to be seeing horses being shot, he saw it. He saw it. It was very bad. So that's not, the horse situation is not good for me. But it's certainly, it's a motif.
No, Alex, I don't think it is a motif.
Yeah, because of the blood from Marie Antoinette, being her head being chopped off.
Oh.
Gory violence. Could that be a motif?
Well.
Or is it a theme, violence?
It is a theme, violence. But I wonder whether the death of the horse might make us empathise and maybe like Napoleon a little more, because something obviously he's so close to has been so has been struck down.
Yeah, could be. Or maybe it's an incredibly veiled reference to the fact that eventually Napoleon Bonaparte's war making is going to mean he runs out of horses and can't exploit his 1813 victories.
I don't think so, Alex. I don't think your average film goer would be able to take that away from this scene. But I wonder whether it's the save the cat moment.
Oh, save the horse that can't be saved.
Kill the horse. Kill the horse moment. Yeah, exactly.
Regrettably, was sat on the back of a horse that died.
Yeah, doesn't that make you feel for him? When he gets up and he's got all that horse blood on his face, don't you think to him, oh, Napoleon, I like him a bit more than I did hitherto.
To be honest, I don't know. I'm not sure I do, to be honest.
And Barat's giving Napoleon a job to do. He needs to take the fort at Toulon. And I don't know if that's historically accurate or...
Well, so his exact words are, you've got to capture the fort that dominates the harbour and you have the city, which is correct. It's that fort that's way up the hills overlooking the harbour of and the city of Toulon, some distance away. Let's see how that goes.
And so as 15 minutes appears on the screen, Napoleon is looking over the harbour of destroyed English ships, blood on his face, his hands clasped to his ears against the sound of the cannons.
Blood-spattered face.
I said blood-spattered face, but I'll say it again. Napoleon is staring out onto the harbour of destroyed English ships, blood-spattered face. his hands covering his ears against the sound of cannons, looking a bit disturbed by loud noises. Don't know if that was a historically accurate part of his character or not. But he's been successful. He's taken too long.
Yeah, it feels fairly climactic that you have this. Oh, the other thing is the emphasis on heated shot, a word which gets used a lot. Maybe that's another motif, but it's very important because otherwise, how could that? If the shot wasn't heated, how could that ship have exploded so magnificently, so very, very quickly? But it's a condensing, isn't it? I'm trying to find ways of reconciling myself with what I'm seeing based on what I know. And I think the big thing I've got from you over the course of this 15 minutes is there's a certain squishing that needs to happen, a certain compressing of actual events into a... It's a bit like if you take a soft, white, fluffy roll and you squidge it down into its... into the sort of dough-like, thick, pasty consistency that is this movie, perhaps.
I think that's a very apt metaphor, Alex.
Particularly given the shortage of bread in revolutionary Paris.
Quite.
So, okay, so you're trying to help me understand what's happened here, like why they've done this the way they. I can see how there's been a bit of squishing, but in particular Napoleon, but I want to ask you about character. We've got quite a lot about Napoleon Bonaparte's character.
No, I think there's still a lot to learn about Napoleon Bonaparte, but we know that he wants to be promoted within the army, and we know that he's got something of a fixation about his mother. Two very important points, I think, that we'll want to revisit.
Okay, that'll do. That works. And we think that the number one candidate for a motif to return to is goats.
As far as we can see so far, but who's to say? It's very difficult to tell in those first 15 minutes precisely what your motifs are going to be.
Okay. If anyone has any comments or questions about this, then please do drop us a line. It's the usual email, napoleonicquarterly@gmail.com, but anything that's about this film, it won't be part of the normal Napoleonic Q's, Q&A bonus episodes, but rather we'll just sort of, you know, read them out as they come in. So do just ping stuff over. But for now, James, I don't feel sufficiently... Give me a word for about this movie. I don't feel sufficiently...
Engrossed?
No, sufficiently convinced. Convinced by... your screenwriting explanations, grateful as I am for them, I feel like we need to do a little bit more watching to really truly understand this and try to get under the skin of it. James, would you be happy to come back to discuss the next 15 minutes?
I would love that, Alex.
In which case, that's excellent news. In which case, all that remains is for us both to say together and in perfect sync. Vive la podcast.